Shop Maniacs. You're listening to a birthday hangover edition of the Shop Talk Show. Oh. Hey, Chris, how are you holding up, man?
Oh, I'm doing great. Yeah, thanks. My birthday was yesterday. It was really nice. I was back home in Wisconsin with the family.
Oh, awesome. Yeah.
Seeing the sister, seeing the parents, seeing everybody. Pretty nice. Kid got a bunch of bug bites. Just so many. She's like, I have like 15 on my foot. I'm like, you don't have 15. Who gets 15 bug bites? And I look at her ankle and I'm like, oh my God.
Are you, who's your parent? Oh no.
Yeah.
Ah, drat.
Yeah. Running through the itch cream and stuff, getting through that. Pretty good. You know what I did on my birthday too? Never saw this coming. Played a little round of golf.
Golf, huh? Yeah.
I haven't did that since I was a kid. My stepdad's a very good golfer, and he invited me out, and, you know, he's 81.
Okay.
82? I don't know. Old, but he's in great shape. Golfs all the time, and he's great at it, you know? I remember asking him a couple of years ago if because he's golfed for most of his life, I think.
Yeah.
I'm like, are you a better golfer now, you know, than you were? Like, you have all this accumulated hours of practicing.
He's like,
maybe you're better, or maybe you're worse because you're old.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And he's like, no, I'm better. I'm probably playing the best golf of my life, you know? And
really?
I can't hit it as hard, but, you know, but man, the ball goes where he wants it to go. I'll tell you what.
My father-in-law, I play one round of golf a year, and my father-in-law is very good at hitting it very far. And so he has an easy time the rest of the time. I don't hit it very far, and I hit it very to the side. And so it is very tough for me. And I'll just, like, my brother-in-laws and my father-in-law are very accommodating to me. They're like, you can just pick it up. And I'm like, thank you. I appreciate that. I did not need official. I'm good for 9 holes, maybe 12. After that, why are we out here?
We did 9, and I was all about it. I was like, dude, this is, you know, I was about done at 9, probably. There was still drama and stuff. It was still fun. I feel like 9 is a good number to play, you know? And if you had an 18-hole course nearby, couldn't you do they let you start on the 9, or is that, like, uncouth?
Oh, yeah. They'll, like, stagger it sometimes, or, like, I think you're supposed to, whatever. They'll have, like, multiple courses, but I think it's, like,
certainly.
You can.
I think I know the stuff pretty good, but I don't know. I don't have it all locked in, you know, maybe it's a par 5, you know, you're certainly teeing off while they're on the green. That's fine. You know, but I didn't know that. I thought maybe you have to wait the whole time or whatever. And where can exactly you drive and where can't you? And what do you, I know, you know, I don't know, replace the divot if you can, but there's kind of a lot of little cultural stuff to know.
Yeah.
But I liked it. I also had a pretty bad slice, but I was kind of working on it during the round. And it honestly makes me want to go to the range, you know, just try to fix that, you know, because when you have a good shot, it's a little addictive, you know, you're like, oh, dang.
Yeah.
Got a hold of that one.
Like, if I could do that one 100 times, I'd be really good at this sport. But then, that's fun, though. It's funny how little I play. Yeah. I'm like wrecked afterwards too, because it's like back, hands, you know, my little baby computer hands don't swing a club ever, you know, and so now I'm, you know, sunburned. It's kind of wrecks me.
Kids ahead of us, one of the kids just took a swing and the club just went flying.
Oh, really?
You know? And I'm like, I feel like, I don't know, as little as I know, I essentially was saying I was playing golf for the first time. I bet I was 12 years old last time I was playing. But I had a good, maybe not good, but like there's something intuitive about it. Like I already had the grip fine and stuff. I feel like even my stroke was okay for a first timer. Like I get some of the basics, you know, and I can respond well to teaching. But stuff like that, I'm like, my club was never at risk of flying out of my hands into the air. Like, oh my God, some people are helpless. I feel like I have a decent intuition of like how hard I might need to chip or putt. Maybe it's just mini golf or something. But like, you know, I feel like it in my arms a little bit, like not too hard, not too soft, couple practice swings. Okay, it's close, you know.
I
feel like there's some, you know, some people can have some intuition for that. Not that I'm so great, but I feel like I can imagine somebody just being like, I don't know, whack, you know, and you're like, whoa, what did you think that was going to do the right thing? Are you crazy?
You know, my brother-in-law, he'll pull up, you know, get out the viewfinder. He's like, you're at like a 180. So I'd probably just do like a 7, you know, 3/4 swing or something. You know, I'm like, hey, Cody, buddy, I'm not
good. I might at use this a game. Baseball bat.
I'm going to use a 3-wood and we're just going to smash it as far as we can. But then, or it's like, I have the perfect, you know, I've been hitting this iron all day or something, you know, the 9 or something, you know, and I know exactly how I swing it. And I'm like, cool, I'm just going to punt it in because that's what I do. I know exactly how far. And then it's like the best hit of my life. And it's like into another planet, you know, in the water across the golf course. I'm like, I can't win, dude. Sometimes I can't win. So, but you know, that's definitely, you get good at it because you do it a lot. It's not like, yeah.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I think that's probably why my dad does it and my in-laws do it. And because it's just a thing you can get better at over many weekends.
Indeed. Where should I take this? I saw a little, one of those intent to ships, you know, that's fun.
Okay.
It's always Google. I don't know. Have you ever seen an intent to ship that's not Google?
Yes, I have. But no, I think it's very sensitive around there.
Yeah.
Based on past shippings.
It was a HTML element, angle brackets, and then persistent widget. And it was like, or maybe an attribute on an iframe or something. And the idea was, you know, like a video or whatever, or an audio element or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. I'm sure it can be or whatever, but I'm sure those are the obvious things. Like, hey, I have a a multi-page document. I don't want to go SPA just to keep a video playing or something. So it's a little bit more push on the, I don't know. I want this piece of UI to persist between navigating between two pages. And by persist, I mean not just visually be there, but like don't stop playing or don't re-render at all, please. Mm-hmm. Just looks cool. I don't know much about it. I just saw it and I was like, cool. You know, I like the push.
I saw it. I guess I didn't read closely enough and now I regret it. But is it a thing where you are it has to be like a from a third part, like a source file, a different source file, right? It's not like a
maybe, but it definitely has to be same origin. I can read the summary. Origin, persistent widgets are embedded browsing contexts like iframes, so they'll have a source theoretically.
Yeah, but they can persist is across persistent iframes is like the original proposal. But yeah, okay. So
Yeah.
Okay.
But they can persist across same origin navigations without reloading. Persistent widgets can be used via the persistent widget HTML element. The persistent widget HTML element takes a source attribute like an iframe. In order to make the persistent widget survive a navigation, all these conditions must be met. One, navigation must be same origin. Two, the persistent widget element must have the same source and ID as attributes in both documents. Mm-hmm. And three, the persistent widget element must be attached to the new document before its first render. So it's not like inserted via JavaScript on the second page or something.
Okay. Yeah,
seems cool. Ship it.
We said maybe even like 6 weeks ago, we were like, oh, if you want an audio player to stay there for the whole, you know, between navigations, mm-hmm. you got to do a SPA, right? And
pretty much, you know,
now I've we're kind of saying no.
A little hacker thing where it saves it to local storage, the where you are. And then when it reloads from local storage and fast forwards to that spot in the media. That's not the same. You will hear a hiccup.
I think that's
clever.
Good. Yeah.
I don't have much to say about it because I'd hate to be super wrong. I just wanted to be like,
Let's say it wrong and then
hear about it.
And then Brian Cardell corrects us. That's how this whole podcast empire we built works.
Yeah.
So what the persistent widget does is it checks your email every hour. That's what it does. It's persistently checking email. So, no, that's cool. I was going to say, I was watching, I keep up with internet, you know? But I was watching a syntax thing where they're like, you know, 10 cool things or whatever. And it was around a camera element. Did you see that? like a...
Oh, you know what I listened to? Because they had a full shorty episode that was perfect for a drive of mine. And it was like, whatever, 8 CSS tricks. And it had some basic stuff like all good stuff. I just mean like stuff you've heard of probably, like the relative color syntax and stuff. And one of them was, audio and media or audio, like a microphone element, which is, I think, probably going to come out first as a media element or whatever. But what it's in the same family of... that they didn't say in the podcast, but you know, I didn't plan to do like a, you know, shakes my fist at podcast thing, but I'm like, oh, you're missing the story. The story is recovery. The
permission element to geolocation to this stuff, right?
Like, geolocation was kind of the first out, and it's beautiful because it's like, first of all, you click it and it does geolocation. That seems a little obvious. And I think their point was like, but you have to like do JavaScript to do the geolocation anyway. Like, it's kind of useless without JavaScript. So why the HTML involvement? Well, there is a bunch of reasons, actually. But the permissions being chief among them, I think. I like that it's recoverable. If at any point you said, no, don't geolocate me on this page, the user recovery from that is so, it's like none. It's so bad.
Yeah, you're in jail.
And the geolocation element has a way back.
Okay. Yeah, because it's a button. It's a button.
You just press it again, and then it asks you again. So the recovery is super high. Yeah. It goes from like none to super high for recovery, which I think is great. Because it's, I don't know, just you asked to be asked. So it's like not a problem. It's not trying to be annoying. And it has, it's styled a certain way. You know, like that's why we use native elements and stuff when we can, because there's some understanding to it. If everybody starts using a geolocation element, there'll be like a look to it that you get used to, whatever. But it's the same deal with microphones. If you ever said like, no, I'm not granting my freaking microphone.
Yeah.
Now there's a button to grant access to the microphone.
Why does the place where I pay my car, my car loan, need my microphone?
Yeah.
You know,
I say no all the time to
Best
that
Buy?
Stuff.
It's not, nah, dude, you don't get my microphone.
Absolutely not. And these days it's like Claude wants, and I'm like, no. Oh,
yeah, no, buddy. Yeah. Not unless we're having a conversation. Right.
So I'm a fan. The recovery is one of them. The look is one of them. The fact that you can instantiate the first JavaScript command without JavaScript is one of them. It's just nice. It's not groundbreaking, I'll say, but it's a nice improvement to HTML for all anything permissions based is neat.
Yeah. Well, and you know, my hope is, all this stuff just becomes normalized, because it was like they've had these APIs, like you could request get user media or user, get user media, and like you can, but that's Dave Rupert now home rolling my own experience to do that. You know, like I do kind of like this like browser level, hey, the browser, sort of like an operating system, you know, it's like the browser is asking you for this, you know, like, are you cool? And you'll manage it here in browser, because we're browser and we, you know, you use this all the time. And so like, I think that's better than like, remember that time you accessed DaveRupert.com and gave it your microphone, and now you can use it forever. Now you can use your microphone forever. That's less great, right? So So anyway, I didn't know that these specifically, camera and microphone, I kind of like assumed they went after geolocation, but I didn't know that they were like, oh, we're coming out, intent to ship. And so
I think geolocation is maybe not fully baseline, but close. It's not just Chrome anymore. And I think the other ones probably are closer to Chrome only still. But they, you know, they trickle along. Things move a lot faster than they used to, tell you that.
Let me go to mdn.io geolocation element. Did you know you can just type mdn.io/ and Google something?
And then do a fuzzy?
And it'll do fuzzy, and it goes to DuckDuckGo, and then it goes to MDN. It's pretty sweet ass. Let's see what the baseline is. Okay, no Firefox and no Safari on geolocation, but...
Still neither of them? Oh, that's too bad. Or is there good signals or anything?
I don't know.
I didn't think that was true. I thought there was more than just Chrome.
I thought we were closer.
That's a bummer. The thing is, you can wire it up like a button. It's like decently progressive enhancement-able. Mm-hmm.
Well, I was going to say permissions is there, but I don't know about permission element.
There's also, Dave, if you're talking about just geolocation, some attributes on that button that are kind of interesting, like how fine-grained do you want it to be? You can ask for more or less fine-grained geolocational stuff. That's neat kind of thing to do declaratively, I think.
Yeah, and the styling is limited too. I think I don't know if you discovered that. Yeah, you did.
I did a whole post about it. Yeah. You can't, I called it enforced accessibility of it, because there's a bunch of stuff that you can't do to the button. It's like an interesting set of CSS that you can't do. In the end, I ended up thinking it was a cool idea, just relatively like weird and unique in CSS. We haven't quite seen that particular set of things be enforced yet. Kind of liked that.
Well, that's like the highlight API has restrictions too. You know, it's nothing that can
change layout. You put them right.
It's
no bolding, or italic. Even.
No bolding, no italics, like nothing that changes layout or could recalc anything.
Cause, because it could reflow then.
It's only like backgrounds and foregrounds and underlines, maybe. I guess those wouldn't impact the document.
Yeah, text decoration you can do.
Yeah. So anyway, it's kind of like I
hope it allows overline. My favorite text decoration. You know, you're like, who's doing that?
Overline
something.
Oh yeah, strike through. Yeah, love to strike through. No yeah, thanks. I don't know. I guess I'm kind of I'm curious how far geolocation would go. That would be cool.
It's also has CSS pseudo classes. Like if it's if you haven't asked yet, or if you've asked and it's been denied and stuff, there's CSS pseudo classes to style it in a certain way. Ah, that's great. How cool is that?
Mm-hmm. You know, what's funny is I see geolocation and like selected content in MDN, but I don't see permission element, you know, and I don't see.
No, well, the permission element is scrapped.
Oh, that's, it's gone.
Too generic. So, they were going to do, that was going to be like permission for anything, the overarching anything. Okay. And they're like, no, we're going to roll these out one at a time for specific things. That's
okay. That's fine. That's great. That's probably better. But, okay. I thought I was uncovering the bias of big Firefox and MDN. You know, I thought I was really on to some journalism here, but guess not. Yeah. So
that's tricky.
Ready to expose.
Well, here's a deal, but here's a segue.
Yeah.
Charts and graphs, you know?
Love them. Do it. Yeah.
I saw even TanStack is getting in on the thing lately. I wonder why. Was it like, to me, it had just my first reaction. I have no idea. I don't know any of these people. I don't know anybody involved. But I know that's relatively popular. It had this feel of like, that's something that we could AI out like pretty quickly. Right. Like I want to have a good, we're already popular for lots of other stuff.
And then it turns out it's just a D3 wrapper. Chris, why would you be like this?
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
I don't know. It just feels like, hey, you use us for lots of stuff already. I think we can do a pretty good job with this. Like, I don't, it's no judgment call, but it just feels like, I don't know. We have lots of stuff. So like, here's another stuff.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, I think it may be like, I'll give it some credit. Like if you've used D3, like your camera's frozen.
It's like
for
meant
me.
To be wrapped. It's hard.
Anyway, D3 is like not a great experience. And so that, like, I think anything you can do to make it better is great. And I think they do kind of like do like a, you know, I think it's like Shad CN style, you know, charts and stuff and tokens and whatever.
And
you
they
know,
get a
so,
chance to invent an API around it that might feel really good.
Yeah, you're kind of like combining things. And so
I was stoked to be like, how client side is this? Is it because TanStack, you know, they have TanStack Start and, you know, they do server side stuff too. Like, how server side did you go with it? Which I don't know fully, but I know it works client side just fine. Because I was like, I'm going to try to pull it, put it in an import map and all that stuff like we do on CodePen, and it works just fine. So
it works. Well, I don't see it anymore, but it used to be like, it's only like 40 kilobytes or something, or it's 30 some kilobytes. And so like, oh yeah.
Pretty good.
That's really good. Like, especially cause like D3 is like 200 megs. It feels like, you know, like, so I wonder if they, you know, they're just maybe better loading and stuff too. Like,
yeah,
maybe there's some
internal
tree
shakage.
You know?
I like it. I don't have much to say about it other than that crossed my path. Well, I've finished our Mermaid implementation at CodePen. which is pretty fun. So I think that's live for everybody. I haven't really marketed it yet because there's just more I want to do. But if you make a .mermaid or .mmd file, it'll just convert into an SVG file that you can use then, you know? You know what a mermaid is, right, Dave? Have you ever used mermaid?
Love mermaid, yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. They invented their own syntax for charts and graphs. So it's really easy to make flow charts and Venn diagrams and state charts and stuff. You have to almost be a graph nerd to know them all. They have so many. Mm-hmm. But it does a good job with it. And you're writing in this really simple text format and it just instantly turns into a chart, which makes it just easy to update and iterate on and stuff. AI likes it because it's, you know, speaks in text and all that. Yeah. I like it. I think Mermaid is cool. But it was like relatively complicated to get going because it, you know, had some, sometimes it relies on the browser and like measuring stuff in a browser. And it's like, we don't have a browser. It's like a node implementation. So it has to use like JS DOM and SVG DOM to figure stuff out. And then has to load the right fonts to get the math right and da 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 da. And I don't think most people make Mermaid files. Some people do, and we need to support that because that's the root technology. They write it in Markdown. They write triple backtick Mermaid, and then they put the chart. So it's really an update to our Markdown block is probably the most highest usage of it. And then there was some interesting like cross-block stuff going on. Like there's a configuration file for Mermaid, and I want the Markdown block to support the mermaid configuration. So if you say, oh, I want all these boxes to be green, you can put that in a config file and then all your mermaid charts, even though they're in Markdown, are green and stuff. So that's kind of a fun little challenge and stuff. So yeah, mermaid's working pretty good on the old code pen. And then for me, it's like interesting, like, oh, I want to make a bunch of examples. I want to teach people how to use it. I want to, you know, there's kind of a lot of touch points to it. Makes templates and maybe I can even get somebody from Mermaid to talk to me on a podcast, which I've failed at so far. Stuff like that.
Who makes Mermaid? No one knows.
I found one guy, but he clearly doesn't publish any contact information, which is understandable on the internet, you know? So I was like, all right, I'll leave him alone. Who else can I talk to?
Imagine being the person who, like, just your support requests are going to be like, I run a business. I need a spreadsheet, you know, or whatever. Like, you're like,
yeah,
I don't know, man. I just make flowcharts. That's sort of how it started.
Yeah, I'm just the chart nerd. Yeah, it looks like they have a bit of a business model behind it, though. Like, I think even their URL is like mermaid.ai now or something some enterprise things. I didn't look into it too much because they have a nice open source offering, and that's where we've started. But you'd think they'd be interested in a little promo. I don't know. Anyway, not much more to say about that. But I also was thinking about think that you might be interested is that I've been a little chart crazy lately with like how easy they can be to create and help analyze stuff. I'm just tracking a lot more stuff. I'm so excited about our 2.0 release and like measuring usage of certain things and whatever. And just decided, you know what, we'll just, you know, oh, I've been so sick of analytics. Let's just start tracking our analytics in our own database. Like usually it's not the most efficient use case for it, but if we're not tracking everything under the sun, so like just tracking a little bit of like, this feature got used, just chucking that as a little data in a table is fine. And now I'm like, ooh, it's in our own database. Now I can chart the hell out of it. And then payment related stuff too is interesting, you know, like just, you know, a little under the covers here, we have a pretty steep discount on an annual plan, like a lot of places do. Like, why wouldn't you, you know? Well, maybe that isn't obvious to everybody that the why wouldn't you is that, well, then you sold the whole year up front. Like you get the money right away and there's less churn with those plans.
Less churn, so it's good, but you sort of risk a big like next year bail.
You
right?
do if
like,
they leave. Yeah. So like, you have to figure out if that's actually happening or not, but that we have pretty good evidence that an annual plan is just good for CodePen.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not absolutely night and day, but it's a bit better. So why not push them even with the discount, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
So like, let's say you're going to try to give more of a discount or offer a coupon or, whatever you want to do, you know?
Yeah.
But then
a BOGO.
Sure.
You're doing BOGO code pen accounts.
So then you're like, okay, I want to like make a change that like explains, I don't know, that pushes annual even harder. That's like, hey, mm-hmm. you should know that this is a lot cheaper, you know, like if you plan to use CodePen for a whole year, which I hope I can convince you is a cool idea. You know,
you'll save bucks. It's free money.
Like,
yeah.
Do that, you know? Yeah. But that's an A/B test. Like, what if I'm too annoying about it, Dave? What if I'm just like, I just overdid it. Like I was too obnoxious about it. How do you know? Well, you run it as a test and then you test, you know, are you 10% selling more plans or whatever? And that's pretty easy to graph, but it's got me thinking and us talking about like, it's also easy to make a bad graph.
Yeah.
It's easy to make one that's just like, that you're just like, oh, they went sales. Look, they went down a little bit.
Yeah.
Or something. Yeah. And you're like, yeah, but you did 50% of users and sales were down that day a little bit anyway. So like, maybe that's just a weird thing that happened that day. It's not proof that your test necessarily is wrong. It's not a percent, you know, like, I don't know. It's just easy to just make a chart and then be like, chart equals truth, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm subject to that. This was my fault. I'm like, oh, chart equals truth.
Yeah. Well, it's the, every chart tells a story, Chris. So, but it's that thing where like, I used to help run A/B tests for a large pizza company, and some of the A/B tests were just features that we ship permanently through the backdoor injection script. Or I guess the thing like that is interesting, or I found interesting over all the A/B testing that I did, you know, is it's like everyone's like, oh my god, we made the button radius, you know, 4 pixels, and the numbers went, you know, up 10% conversion, you know, and I'm like,
yeah.
And they're like, that's a $50 billion dollar increase. And it's like, okay, wow, amazing. Like, we should totally do it, you know?
Yeah, let's do that. 10%. We're rich.
But, like, you get to the end of the year, and, like, we're not sitting on a pile of $50 billion. So what happened to our A-B tests? Or what, you know? Like,
yeah.
Like, if every time we made an A-B test go up and that actually happened, what, you know, like, I don't know. Like,
I don't think you were telling the full story there. Or you can wave it away and be like, well, you know, good thing we did that change because sales were down 20%. So if now they're only down 10%.
Totally. It could be that too. Yeah. Like, I just think there's like some magical thinking or you know, I guess it's math, but it's like, you know, oh, if we did one number, you know, number goes up this much on a 10% run, then that's like 10 million. And then we're doing, then we do that all year. It's a billion, you know? And like, I'm just kind of like, man, there's like, it's like this magical thinking or this like, sort of I don't know. Just, it's like over amplifying the impact sort of like, or over extrapolating, I guess, maybe like,
Well, then you have the chart that's backing you up. I mean, that's the danger that I put forth, you know, I have to be really careful about is that you're like, I'm not guessing. Look at this chart. Look at this line. It's clearly going up.
Well, and like if I make a button that is like rainbow colored and has a unicorn emoji and like, you know, it's like super gay and it, you know, and it's like gets tons of clicks, you know, and I'm like, dude, the clicks are through the roof for, you know, our gay theme button. And like, people will become immune to that novelty over time, right? And so like it doesn't equal a year of revenue. That's a very one-timey shot, you know, for me, the like, kind of just thinking like, oh, it's just, if I make one change, it's going to like be this amazing thing. You know, it's just going to be like, and I think people uphold Amazon as like the like, oh my God, they totally made it better, you know? And
well, it like, feels so true, right? Like they don't just mess around with their product pages.
No,
surely they like, don't.
I work very close with some products that also have like monetized every single pixel of the page. Right. And so like there's pouring cement over the entire thing. Right. Like you go to Amazon product page. Have you ever been to one, Chris? Do you think it's good? Do you think that's good web design? Gosh, they got their stuff together.
It's always a surprise to me. Like, whatever you're looking for, like, say it's reviews, you're like going to be surprised where they are. Like, oh, they're under the weird promo for some other product, but they're above the something. I don't know. There's just a lot of stuff on that page.
No, absolutely. They somehow are smart enough to detect the thing I'm looking for, and they decide to put it somewhere on the page. I can't find it. But like, that's my, like, it's held up as this,
I like it when you're like looking at like some Windex or something, but you can zoom in on the bottle. You can like really, like, I need that. I mean, I need, definitely need that. Enlarge this image with a zoom.
Right.
To look at the Windex.
Well, like, yeah, I'm on this one page now, and it's like, oh, they got the feature where you can just put a whole website under the product description, you know, like with tabs and carousels, and, you know, and I'm just like, this is not better, dudes. This is, you put a website inside of a website, and like, I just, we're not, this isn't great, you know? And then there's a, they like, oh, we got little, we've got a baby YouTube in here too. You know, that's what people like. And we got reviews with also with videos, you know, it's just all this, like, you know, all this stuff, dude. Anyway, I bring a lot of questions to the table when people are like, oh, I made number go up 10%. Amazing, isn't it? You know? And you're like, and we're going to make so much money because I made number go up. And it's like, well, then why aren't we all just sitting on a bajillion, you know? And maybe Amazon is sitting on a bajillion, but, you know.
I don't know. It's tempting to think about that. But I do think it needs to be worked on. I mean, of course, the number goes, if your analysis is wrong, it's wrong no matter what. So if you've decided, oh, I made a change and it made it worse, like, are you sure? Did it?
Well, and there's other numbers too. Like, it's like, do you want time on site or do you want clicks? You know, like, there's sort of like... Mm. You know, like what do you, you know?
Fortunately, when it comes to sales, you're like, sales. That's the
sales.
That's
yeah.
the number trick. But it does need to be like percentage of sales based on other things that happen that day, because it can be like 4 sales turned to 3 sales is different when it's like, I don't know, the day of Eurovision or something, and nobody's shopping online or whatever.
Well, yeah, I'm looking at guitar pedals now on Amazon things. But like, really got really deep really quick on this one. But the, you know, like if Joe Rogan talks about your guitar pedal, oh man, big day for you, you know, like number go up, you know. But if you were running an A/B test on like, yeah, you know,
ruins that
this product photo, did, was that it? Or you don't know, man. You don't know.
There's got to be a way to do it. It just needs to be a little more, a good tests analyzed very correctly.
Yeah. I understand your thing about like, you know, number go up is like what matters, and that does matter. But there's something to be said, like if money is the only thing that like matters, or like if that's the, if you're measuring money, the answer is put boobs on it, you know, like that. Like that's how you win. But the money game.
Oh, yeah, like, there's also the really long term thing. Isn't the Substack is kind of the like a classic, the like anything that pops up a subscribe to this newsletter thing. Like, do you think if you put a pop up on a page when you scroll up halfway down and you measure how many email addresses you get versus not doing that, do you think you get more email addresses doing it? You do. You get more email addresses when you do it. It's also obnoxious. So what's the cost to that? You don't know. You're not measuring the cost against it. But you get this. There's this secret cost. There's the like, oh, that website's obnoxious cost.
Yeah, you get people people like disabling JavaScript on your site and turning off ads and all that, you know, like there's a penalty.
Fortunately, if you're me and my classy team, we just don't even do classless stuff, you know? So
no, that's nice. There's, I think taste is going to be the big difference maker. I've been watching all that, or we've had a good discussion. How we said, is it an AI show? I don't want to make it an AI show, but there's been a big discussion about people like kind of reevaluating their relationships with AI, like in the Discord and stuff like that. And some people are dropping it and some people are forced to use it for work and some people are, you know, in between, right? Or or some people love it, you know?
And one of the topics is like, I feel like I'm getting dumber, and like, I feel like I'm like scared about that, which is
legit. Syntax had a good episode, very highly edited, like very, like, you know, very like
a fancy one.
Levels of like of journalism here. And so, but I think it, like, what was good about it, or like Aaron Francis, I think, said this interesting thing. Like, he's like, oh, I don't get stressed out about it. I'm like, okay, dude. But I have realized anyone can do the idea, you know? And so, like, you really have to, like, only, you know, I think somebody was saying, like, a video editor or something. It's like, everyone I know is making a video editor in a coffee shop in San Francisco, you know, for their content, you know? But, like, you know, I could make one of those, or I really have to, like, dig in to figure out what I bring to the table. What's my, like, personal technical or, like, knowledge moat, I guess. Like, what do I bring to the table, and what can I build that is useful there? And so, like, that was an interesting gate for me to process, just because I'd built things before, and you know, and it's like, or yeah, you can, and even like people I work with, they're just generating a whole bunch of stuff, but it's like anyone can make that, but like, what are you good at? You know, like, starting from that question, like, what do you bring to the table, and what can you make, rather than like, hit me, you know, I don't know, podcast app. Yeah. Okay, great. You know, like,
yeah, chip it. Yeah. No, I know exactly what you mean. I got an email today from somebody who's like, oh, I'm thinking about doing this site that does this and this and this. And I was like, yeah, it sounds cool. Yeah. It was like music related somehow. I was like, let me know when it's done, check it out. Knowing that it's just like, I don't know, you're just vibing it up, you know, like, obviously. And then I got another email before I even got the email that said, here's the URL to go check it out. It was like, I've made the hard decision to spin it down.
You know, oh, no, okay. That quick, huh?
It was a little bummer, but, like, you know, at least you didn't waste too much time on it, you know. But, like, don't be too heartfelt about it. It's not like you're killing this thing you spent a decade on.
Yeah. Speaking of music sites, my old coworker Ray started Midnight Vinyl Club. I want to give a shout out to that.
I feel like I'm in the top 20 users.
It's pretty cool. It's about records, you know, but it's about like, whatchamacallit. It's more about like surfacing music, like, you know, like different like genres and subgenres and stuff are kind of like in there, you know? So, Like, kind of like most upvoted.
It's already been cool to me to be like, oh, I didn't know that was even on vinyl. Because is that a prerequisite to be on here? Like, it has to be,
you know,
on vinyl?
I assume. No? I don't know. I think it's more just like music, but maybe there's a vinyl requirement, because he links out to a bunch of records and stuff. But, you know,
I think
it also.
That'd be cool to me. I'm a vinyl guy. I think I have a nice setup.
People who like records or like music generally, I think there's a huge crossover there. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I think, but
a lot
I
of
think
album, like, art and stuff. Looks nice. Good job. Is it just him?
Just him. Yeah. Just kind of doing it up. And so, you know, and kind of like some neat, like, you know, latest pop punk albums on vinyl or whatever, you know, there's like, you know, new releases and stuff like that. And, his brother runs this old website we used to, a community called Austin Town Hall. It was like a website we helped him out with for a long time. We ran like a music site in the background.
Oh, and this has kind of swallowed it up a little bit.
Yeah, a little swallowed up. And his brother has really great taste in music and was kind of, you know, I think before Kids or whatever did a bunch.
Remember, there used to be like a little too much of the like designers plus music. This is a site. If you're a graphic designer and you like music. And I've always been like, I don't give a crap what other graphic designers like. It's not a metric that matters to me in musical taste. In fact, I probably share less in common with your average graphic designer than I do with a construction worker. Anyway, that's an old rant of mine. I won't research, but this has no particular, it's just like people who like music, it looks like.
Yeah. Well, I think that's kind of, anyway, just, join it. I think it's kind of, it's beautiful to look at, but it's also just kind of like, oh, wow, I didn't know that album was, you know?
Oh, so, there's you. I was like, where are you? There you are. You're followed.
I'm new. I like saw it and then I was like, I'm going to actually sign up. So I was, cause I was like, oh, it's for vinyl only. I have a record player, but it's like broken. So, but you know, I talked to Reagan and he's like, yeah,
maybe doesn't have a spot in your life.
Yeah, I was talking to Reagan though. And he was just kind of like, oh, here's kind of some ideas. And I was like, this sounds like a website I need. Just because you remember music recommendations? You remember RDO? How it used to be good, right? Or you'd talk to people you like and trust or whatever for music recommendations. But then, like, you know, it all kind of just changed when we all kind of like went to Spotify or whatever. And, you know, Spotify's fine, but it doesn't. It's weird how like it gets me, but it also doesn't. That's what I have mixed feelings on Spotify sometimes because it's like, oh, you like totally understand what I'm going to listen to or next. But I very rarely get like this, like whole, like, oh, by the way, here's a whole, this is what your friend Reagan or whoever's listening to. And it's amazing. Or he loves it or, you know, and it's within your wheelhouse. You should check it out. You know, I don't get those, you know.
So, I have a trick I didn't even know was possible until
the end of the day.
Well, that's freaking me out. Where did the rest of your thumb? Where's the middle of your thumb?
It's right here.
Well, not to make I don't care that much, but not to make it all about CodePen all the time. But one of the first blocks I released right after launch was the MJML block. I mentioned it on this show already, I think.
Email.
But I wanted to like tell people, you know, like I think some people probably have a disconnect of like, okay, so it helps you make an HTML email. Like, so what? Or like, how does that, what do I do with that? Like, how many people in the world like handcraft some HTML email and then what? Like, what, how do I send it or whatever? Mm-hmm. And some people are just, they live in a world where they, of course they know, like they have a MailChimp account. And I don't know, it's been a long time since I use MailChimp because they generally have templates and you're just in their drag and drop builder and all that stuff. But surely they have some way of being like, just paste in some HTML you already have and send that,
mm-hmm.
you know? And if you've ever used something like, I don't know, Postmark is a big one or whatever, like you're like making email templates and stuff, they definitely have a way to like keep your HTML email templates in there and send them either as is, or they have templating stuff in there. So you're blasting in and, you know, people's URLs and names and stuff, and it's templating them and then sending them. Some people just know that. And I think some people just don't. They don't live in a world where they're sending HTML email like ever. Mm-hmm. But you could. You know, and one of the things I've always liked about it, like I have posts and examples and templates on this, is like, yeah, I don't know. I'm mostly a fan of text email, like getting too fancy with emails, like it's not always appropriate, but there's a place for it for sure. And one of the ways that you can send it, Dave, that I didn't realize is like, so you have an HTML document that's an email that you're just looking at in your browser, which could be anything. You just like opened up the HTML file in your browser or whatever, or it's mm-hmm. the output window on CodePen, and you just copy it. Just select all the stuff on the page and just Control C or Command C. Just have it on your clipboard. Well, clipboards are like rich, or they can be, you know, they're okay. Like there's stuff. And then you go into a Gmail and you say new email, and then you just click in there and you just hit paste and it'll just go bleh, and then your HTML email is just there.
Wow. And then you can just send it. I just made one. Isn't
that weird?
Weird. So you can just like
send like chunks of HTML, including a completely fully satisfied HTML email.
Wow.
You know, one of the ones that when I was talking about templates, I mean, like it just limits the line length. It just has nice typography. It just has clickable links instead of full, like, you know, things. Like there's like, you can be really lightweight with your HTML emails and it's kind of nice. Anyway, I was just making a whole bunch of cool MJML templates and I was like, I want to teach people why this could be useful. Like, that's a really lightweight way to send an HTML email. It's just a copy and paste it into a new Gmail message.
It's kind of wicked. I just sent you an email, by the way. You know, it's cool.
It looks great. It looks like a really nice HTML
email. Well, and you know, HTML email, right? You're like, surely I can write something modern in the year 2026 of our Lord. And no, you can't. It's all bad. And I like that MJML, it was kind of like, we're doing these little web component-y things, you know? I don't even think it's web components. I think it's just the syntax, right, around it. But it's like, just like a, you know, here's what you need to have. And it's going to, you know, you just type in this really structured format and you write kind of CSS-like things, and then we'll transpile it into something that's going to work when you send it, you know? You know, it's very rectangular, but maybe there's MJMLs that aren't rectangular, you know, but,
yeah, I mean, you can do tons of stuff with them.
Pretty neat. What a good way to test it too. Like you could just go into your Gmail, blast out a few. And like,
I worry a little bit that like, it's not fully, like, I don't know what kind of magic they're doing to make it work, but it's probably not one-to-one with what you wrote. I meant Gmail's doing some fancy stuff. If you really needed to send it exactly as written, I would, you know, use a service that actually does that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I don't know, man. I probably trust somebody who's like, I made a framework for it, than I do like me, or even just like a 20-year-old template that's sitting on MailChimp or something like that, you know? Like,
oh, no, yeah. The output HTML. I mean, after you've copy and pasted it into Gmail, if that's what you're talking about.
The copy paste action is risky, right? Who knows what
your kind of fidelity you're losing, you know?
Yeah. That seems risky.
I'm not sure about that. All right, here's one more for you. This idea of like specialized web hosting has entered my mind a little bit. Because we had Dan on, he talked about AT Proto and stuff. And one of the things that came up was like, you can just host it yourself if you want to. And you had funny jokes about, you know, having it be on your bookshelf behind you.
Think about it every day. But go ahead. No new projects, but I might buy a web server for my tweets.
That'd be neat. And Dan was clear that it's interesting that it's like pretty much static hosting, but not quite, because it needs to like respond to, you know, gets and stuff. But I think it needs to respond to posts too, right? It needs like a probably some kind of web server that knows how to process and perhaps authenticate stuff and whatever. So there's like a little bit of a server. I don't know if that's just some open source thing that you are required to run or what, and that it needs WebSockets. So it needs to accept WebSocket connections for speed or something or whatever. There's some requirements.
That's what I didn't get, or feel like I didn't get an answer to. Maybe like, what's that server cost me? Is it a $50 server or a $200 server? You know,
I don't know. I would assume it's hopefully less than 50 if you're talking monthly. Better be.
Yeah. I actually, somebody on the guy who runs Black Sky, like, I think I asked this question, and he shared some numbers or something, but you know, he's operating in the tens of thousands of people, you know, so like, that cost is amortized, you know.
You got some scale benefit there a little bit.
I'm losing it. But anyway, he was very nice, but he reached out, or he just shared some numbers because I know Jerry, and Jerry looped him in or something like that. But anyway, I don't think it was outrageous, but I do think it was kind of like this, like, you know, probably more than you and I would want to spend for our tweets, but if I can have a bad one on a bookshelf behind me, or like running in an old Mac Mini.
Maybe somebody's already done this, but my point is that it's specialized. Yeah. It's like, it requires a very specific setup to do what it needs to do.
Yeah.
Which is not that rare. I mean, we've been thinking about this for a long time. Remember, we used to have like acronyms for stacks, like the LAMP stack is specialized hosting. It's Linux and Apache and PHP and MySQL and whatever. Okay, that's a little bit specialized, but I think that is still true. We still need like this tech stack that's hosted in some way, but now it's changing a little bit. Like this AT Proto is like a weird little stack that you need, and it's more than just the technologies, but it's like the protocols that it supports and things like that. And then just because today one of the, you know, it was one of those like wake up to your alarms going off thing because like there's the CPU usage on CodePen is too high or whatever. And we're looking at graphs and charts trying to figure it out. And it's it really looks like AI crap, you know, and everybody knows this story. You were telling the story of
accessibility project,
the accessibility project getting hammered with it and stuff like that. So then we're looking through the data and being like, oh, look at this ASN or whatever, some obvious AI crap that respects nothing. None of the AI don't, you know.
Oh, yeah. No robots, please.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You know, everybody laughed at that, but like, you should laugh at that. Nobody respects that. Absolutely nobody.
No, there's, so, dude, there's more videos on how to get around, you know, how to have your scraper get around stuff, you know, which is like,
yeah,
if you've ever done scraping, you've like been in that world, that little bit of pirating. But like you like, it's just, but it's just open. It's like, yeah. Oh, here I made a YouTube video on how to like get around people's like, you know, firewalls or whatever. You're like,
we're seeing stuff that's like, there's probably not even a human at the other end. Somebody said like, I don't know, make a bot that finds APIs and websites and stuff and just extracts as much data as you possibly can get from it. And so when it finds like a GraphQL endpoint, it tries all kinds of crap to see what it can extract out of it. So that's on you as the owner of that, which you should be doing anyway, to rate limit it and authenticate it well and make sure there's limits to everything. Because, you know, if it's happy to cough up 10,000 objects, it'll ask for 10,000 objects, you know, you better not give them. That kind of thing. Just ridiculous, you know? To me, that could be specialized hosting going forward, is that it doesn't even need to know that much about your particular information. It just needs to, the specialized hosting part could be like looking for patterns, ever-changing patterns of essentially bad AI behavior and blocking it, you know? Like, and maybe that's like Cloudflare crap or whatever, but it seems like that's what hosting needs to be. It needs to evolve to the point of like, well, you can't just put a website on the internet. That's ridiculous. It'll just get hammered into oblivion. So we need specialized hosting to block the incredible amount of BS just trying to extract crap out of it and costing us money doing so. Just a thought. Not ideal that a lot of smart people have to be battling this, which used to be nefarious behavior. Now it's still nefarious, but it's nefarious like without even a human head.
Yeah.
You know, they're not even looking to steal data. They're looking to steal data, but not like credit card information and passwords. They could care less about credit card information and passwords. They just want data. Slurp it up.
Well, that's what's funny. Well, like, CodePen, lots of great pens. Probably not the majority. If I'm gonna like go based on my profile,
well, of course, you know, not. What I mean? A lot of people just like, hit the save button or whatever. Yeah, that's
normal. Like by accident. So it's like an empty pen, you know, or whatever. Cool, you scrape CodePen, but how do you know you got a good one? You know what I mean? And then like, now your model is going to have all these like CodePen specific, like your HTML that you guys generate, right? Like it's going to be very like tuned to that, right? And so like, you know.
Why don't you like, talk to us about it? How about that, you know?
Yeah. Pick up a phone. Send an email. Hey, I would like to, could I give you $50 for access to your API? And you're like.
Yeah. I mean, I don't.
Times not, a billion, you know, times 10,000, but sure.
No promises, but we will talk about it.
Yeah, we could talk about an acquisition, but no, it's there's just so much like, you know, I think it like the naivety to just be like, go get all the cool websites and then, okay, now the machine's just going to make cool websites. I don't think so, but like everyone's doing, that's what, like, I think my website or accessibility project, very lean, very tight. You know, it's text. It's statically generated text.
Yeah.
It's pushing out a terabyte a month of content, but it's all to robots. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, what if you were on some specialized hosting that just looked for those kind of patterns and just was like, no, no.
Yeah. Yeah. Denied. Like, is there like, yeah, like a public firewall? And I guess Cloudflare has their product or whatever, but I'm just kind of like... Yeah,
but I mean, that's the product that you use as a human to fine tune to fight it. Because I mean, they're trying and they have expensive enterprise bot products and stuff that tend to theoretically evolve. But no, you need to be on it. If you're serious, it's a manual process still.
So yeah, it's like hardware level situations, right? Like pie holes. Yeah. You know? Like, right. Yeah.
This was just another like little lived experience lately is that like, I think some, you know, if you have this stack and then you host WordPress too, CodePen does this. And I've worked with other people that do this. You're like, yeah, well, our blog is on WordPress because it's just nice for that. You know, WordPress is already very specialized hosting. Mm-hmm. I think when people like raw dog it, that it's not a good plan. Because you're like, it's just LAMP, right? That's the LAMP stack I mentioned earlier. It's just, we just need MySQL back there. We need to run PHP. How hard can this be? The answer is, it isn't. It's fine. You can run PHP and MySQL. Fine. But there's all these special routes in WordPress that are going to get hammered, especially. And you need specialized protection against them. And WordPress is something that you at some scale, probably pretty quickly because of all how heavily trafficked this stuff can be, you have to have caching in place. And WordPress caching is pretty fancy. It happens at lots of different levels and it needs specialized decaching strategies and stuff. And WordPress hosts just know this and require nothing of you to do this. You don't need fancy plugins. You don't even need to think about it because they'll just do it for you because they've been doing it forever and all WordPress are the same in that way. And they'll know how to keep your stuff updated. And they'll know what permissions all the places need to be in order to have them be secure and have them be, it's not breaking anything. And the cron job still works and whatever. And WordPress sites send email. So what are you going to do on your raw dog stack for sending email? Well, specialized WordPress hosting will just make that work, you know? I just feel like it's already like that's obvious already, but it's like, that's just so, it's so specialized and it points towards like, just don't even do it yourself. It's not worth it.
Yeah, no, like, everyone can put up a WordPress site that's going to get hacked, but, that's a good point. Like, yeah, it's like, WordPress hosting
won't get hacked if you use one of these hosts. It really will be secure. Yeah.
How hard could it be, you think? You know, I know how to put a LAMP server online, you know, but like...
Yeah. They used to get hacked when you bought the $20 Media Temple plan that allowed you to host 100 sites, and they didn't do anything special. They just gave you the raw technology, and you screwed it up.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You've chmodded some directory wrong, and bam, you know. Got popped. But no, like there is this like specialized hosting for the product, right? Like, or the whatchamacallit, the like to use WordPress, you should probably have a vendor that does that, you know, just even for the caching, even for the security audits or whatever, you know, like, yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
Like, like the Kraft folks, we haven't talked about them in a while. They have a thing. Like, if I was going to get serious about Kraft, I would totally use their thing. They just have hosting. I would use that, you know,
like yeah.
I don't know. Like, having infrastructure is still important. That's like a way to hang on in tech in this AI world, not to circle it back to that, but that's like good, you know, you're the infrastructure, do that part right.
I think in a world where it's easy to make crap, you know, I think the, how do we organize it or how do we serve it in a way that works and is secure and, you know, is accessible or like the, you know, that used to be the 80%, but now the 80% is like, I guess like making sure it's good, I guess, you know? So, I think that stuff's going easy, maintainable, you know, auditable, stuff like that. So I think that's kind of where things are going, you know, and I think hosting sort of fits into that. Just like, yeah, there's $5 whatever Media Temples or whatever GoDaddy accounts, but like that's not what you need, you know, or like what do you actually need, you know? Anyway, yeah, interesting, Chris, got me thinking.
Yes, so, that's about it.
All right. I do have a meeting to go to, so we should wrap it up. Thank you, dear listener, for downloading this in your podcatcher choice. Be sure to share it up. That's up. You find it on the show and then follow us on one of the good ones, Mastodon or Blue Sky, and then join us in the Discord, patreon.com/shopdocshow, and go download How Many Dudes by Butterscotch Shenanigans. It's really fun. Bellatro levels of power creep is what I'm going to say. So it's, ooh, yeah, it's good. It's good. Yeah. Good way to spend 20 evenings in a row.
So. All right. Good hot tip, Dave. All right. We'll see you next
Chris,
time.
Chris, did you have anything you'd like to say?
Just at shoptalkshow.com.